You are listening to World College Radio Day.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Johnny.
Hi, I'm Guy.
And I'm Will. We're from the band Coldplay, and we support College Radio Day.
Hey, this is Sean Lennon, and I support College Radio.
Estás escuchando el Día Mundial de la Radio Universitaria.
Hey, everybody, this is Grace Potter. Thank you for supporting World College Radio Day.
Salut, vous écoutez le jour mondial des radios universitaires.
Hi, this is Jeremiah Freight from Lumineers, and I support World College Radio Day.
Hi, I'm Alanis Morissette, and I support college radio. But I won't do your homework. Please don't ask me.
And I love college.
This is World College Radio Day.
Over 600 college radio stations in more than 45 countries will celebrate World College Radio Day on Friday, October 7th. On this episode of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast, we welcome the event's founder, Dr. Rob Quick. You'd be hard-pressed to find someone more passionate about college radio or with more street cred in the space. As one of the students who helped launch the UK's first ever FM college station at Oxford University in the 90s. In addition to 15 years as the general manager of campus station WPSC-FM Brave New Radio in Wayne, New Jersey. Among other things, we talk about why college radio is still relevant and why this year's College Radio Day is dedicated to peace.
My name is Dr. Rob Quick. I'm Professor of Communication at William-Patterson University of New Jersey and also founder of College Radio Day, World College Radio Day, and the College Radio Foundation that is based in New Jersey as well. So that's who I am. I grew up as a young lad in Cambridge, England. My father, one of the things he did, he was chaplain at the university there. And growing up in Cambridge is this magical place. You know, obviously you had the medieval town there, the city of Cambridge with the university. Over the course of my time living in Cambridge, I would have encounters with, you know, multiple people, but multiple times I met Dr. Stephen Hawking in person. My father actually went to school with Syd Barrett and Roger Waters of Pink Floyd. He remembers being in a class with Syd Barrett, this art class in Cambridge at Hills Road Sixth Form College. And Syd Barrett was this sort of creative, mad, sort of freewheeling genius, even then, that my father realized was very special. And that really summed up Cambridge. Cambridge was a very special place. And I grew up listening to radio. I loved radio. It was something that I would be listening to it late at night, under the covers, when I should be asleep, I'd be listening to the radio, just really enthralled and entranced by the idea that there was someone, you know, in a studio somewhere doing this broadcast, talking to me in my bedroom late at night when I should be asleep. And they didn't really have much radio in terms of in England at that time for young people, except in England we had hospital radio. Growing up in Cambridge, the biggest hospital we had was Addenbrooke's Hospital, and they had their own radio station downstairs and near the morgue or the dead bodies. The first litmus test for getting involved really was, can you handle that, going down into the depths of this hospital near the morgue, and the darkness and the smell of the damp cobwebs and the feeling that you were going somewhere that really most people, right-thinking people, wouldn't be found. If they really thought about it, they wouldn't be there. But I was so in love with radio that I started there, broadcasting to the patients, who all typically, when we went to get requests, said, we want Roy Orbison or Frank Sinatra. And as a young man, those artists didn't resonate with me. I'm like, you know, rock and roll, but you've got to give the people what they wanted. In this case, the captive audience of the patients who couldn't leave their beds in a pre-internet time, they could only really listen to the radio. But it was a great start. And for me, confirmed in my mind why radio is so fundamentally important, that on a fundamental level, it's a connection between you and another person, isn't it? Particularly when they can call in later in your career, when they can call in and you can interact with them. There's a feeling that it's entirely possible at any given moment that you could maybe even in just a small way change someone's life or make their life better or sort of improve it somehow, even momentarily. And that's what I felt about radio and still continue to feel about radio. And that continued all the way through my college days. In fact, you know, when I went to college, I went to Oxford University. And at that time, it was very obvious to us that there wasn't a college radio scene in the UK like there was in America. And what I was determined to do when I was joined a group of students there who wanted to set up the first FM student radio station in the UK. to get an FM license. And we were told that's absolutely not going to happen. There's no way the government is going to allow a bunch of cheeky students to have an FM license. There's no way they're going to do that. But the more that you tell, and I've found this in my own flesh experience, the more that you tell a bunch of students that they can't do something, the more you just sort of unite them, bring them together to want to do that, you know, regardless of what you're saying. So they won't take no for an answer. We didn't take no for an answer. We got a lot of people involved in our effort, Oxford Student Radio, a lot of famous people. And I remember Lord Putnam, who did the Chariots of Fire, producer of Chariots of Fire, was involved. And then we got the Deputy Prime Minister's wife, Anne Heseltine. She joined our board. And at that point, when you've got the Deputy Prime Minister of the government on board with you, things can change. And so they announced that they would indeed offer a license for Oxford, but we'd have to compete against all these other commercial stations. And we did, and we won. And so I was in the studio myself and my friend Damien, who's now, he's like a professor of journalism, chair of journalism at Oregon State University. We were the first two students. We launched the first ever UK student radio station on FM. It was a moment of history. Now, was it great radio? Probably not. No, we were probably rubbish, dreadful, because we didn't know what we were doing, really. More passion than proficiency. But it was incredible. We'd done something that had never been done before. And I'm reminded, as we are speaking, Connie, that obviously the Queen just passed away recently. And it was after the launch of our station in 1997 that two of the students who originally came up with the idea, Nick and Phil, they were invited to go to Buckingham Palace. And the Queen and Prince Charles recognized them for the achievement of doing something that never been done before, this student radio station. To us, that felt like the ultimate validation. Like we were legitimate then. I mean, if the Queen's recognizing this. And that was it for me. That was then I realized I really loved radio, and I would have to make it my career, because it was really sort of remarkable, that experience of going on the air and communicating and broadcasting. So, yeah, so it's been an interesting story, in parts anyway, so far.
So how did you end up in the US?
So basically, in the UK, one of the things that we do, the system is that before you go to university, you have this thing called a gap year. It's not really done in this country. It's not really done in America. That before you go to university, you have a gap year. Some people travel the world. They discover themselves. They go to Asia or something and have these remarkable spiritual awakenings. Other people work. They get a job for the year to raise money because university is expensive. But either way, the gap year is the idea that you take a year and you mature yourself. For me, I wanted to go to America, and I ended up getting accepted for a year to this college in Missouri called William Jewell College, and they had a college radio station there. I got involved with the college radio station almost immediately, and that's actually, this is why I was one of the few people when I went to Oxford just a year later who had actually had on-air experience on a radio station, because most students at Oxford had never had that opportunity, because no professional radio station is going to allow you on the air, really. So during that time, that 1 year in Missouri, I was able to meet a woman who would become obviously my wife, Laurie. Then we split up because I went back to England, long distance relationship, pre-internet, you know, very expensive phone calls and letters taking 7 days to arrive, you know, that whole thing. She then got accepted to the Oxford Overseas program. So then she then came for a year at Oxford and was able to hear me on the air there. And then as soon as we graduated, we got married. So that's how I'm allowed into America, because obviously I'm now dual nationality as well. But after Oxford, and I was actually in charge of the head of weekday programming. So I was a kid, I was this, you know, 20-year-old, not quite sure of what to do with life, but I was suddenly in charge of all the weekday programming of this radio station in Oxford, which was a great introduction. After that, I went to my master's in radio at University of London. And of course, you don't need any kind of qualification really to do radio. But I wanted to do that. And that's actually really played a pivotal role in what I do today. Didn't know it at the time that would be so essential. But after that, I went straight in and I was offered the opportunity to go to Northamptonshire in the middle of England to be the morning show jock on Connect FM. And they say now, I think it's Smooth Radio. I think it's well known in the UK, Smooth Radio. At the time, they fired the previous guy and they said, good luck, you know, can you do something with this? And I wasn't there very long. I was there just like a year or so. But we did turn it around and we did great things. But we actually did so well. My understanding is we attracted the attention of, because we were a small company, small owned radio station, we attracted the attention of a company that owned many stations. And so they said, hey, they're doing really well. Let's have that. And so we were acquired, promptly laid off. At that time, it was really bad because I felt we were doing a great show. And doing a great show is no defense in the industry if there's changes coming. Within 6 months of being laid off, I found myself in India, completely bizarre. My wife was an editor in London, and she was asked to go to India to oversee the operations there in South India in Chennai. I was looking for a radio job, and I had nothing better to do but to go. And suddenly I found myself at a college there, the Asian College of Journalism, which is actually now some preeminent college of journalism college in Asia. They've had lots of people that go to the lecture, Noam Chomsky and the like. When I was there, they said, hey, could you help us set up this radio course, this postgraduate diploma in radio journalism? And I did that. And actually, they offered me a position to stay and to run it. But we missed family and stuff. So we came back to London and still trying to get a job in radio, and actually ended up getting a really well-paid job, much more than I ever would have made in radio by switching over to, you know, going to the other side and working in PR. And I got a job at PR Newswire for Audio Operations Manager Europe. It was in central London, but the reality is, working in London, even now, more so than ever, it's a young person's game to the extent that, you know, all our energies was going in and our money was going to the effort of working and living in London. And it was great. We didn't have any kids at that point, and I was able to meet a lot of people. And you learn a lot in those days when you're quickly working on, every day is a different story. Every day you're meeting new people. And it was a great education for me in terms of radio production, producing material. But my wife was missing America. And also, we were broke, really, because even though it's paid a lot of money, you pay a lot of money for the privilege of working in London. And we thought we have to get out. and the option was America. And so I saw this position, having had that experience in India, the educational experience, there was a position at St. Xavier University in Chicago to run their media department, the radio station, be general manager, and I applied and I got that job. And so suddenly I go from London to Chicago, and it's very different. Then I was running the station WXAV, and I was there for 5 years, and we did really well to turn that station around. And then from there, I heard about a professorship in New Jersey, also running the radio station WPSE. And I arrived in New Jersey, and I would not say that it was a particularly welcoming place, and it took some getting used to, but the station was in a really bad place. It was like, well, you've got 2 years to turn this around. Otherwise we might just do something with the FM license, give it away. And I was just like, what are you talking about? We are basically part of the number one market here in America, part of the New York market. I saw nothing but potential. I saw nothing but possibility. I threw myself in immediately. The first couple of years were very, very rough. I said, well, the first thing we've got to do is we've got to start streaming online. We've got to be heard. And they said, you'll never do that. General managers have tried to get us to stream online since 2007. You'll never make that happen. I was like, well, surely it can't be. It's not rocket science. Surely we can figure that out. Within a semester, we were streaming online. And then it was the long, hard work of turning a station around, getting students involved, getting buy-in from the students, and really working with the students for them to realize that they can learn how to do radio, and then they can get to a point in their competencies where they can create, they're capable. And this is what I believe, Connie, that students are capable of producing audio and radio work that can be absolutely remarkable, sometimes even sort of quote-unquote better than what professional broadcasters who are paid to do it can produce. Once in a while, not often, the students will produce something so remarkable that it breaks through, and it really is like, this is, you know, very effective, powerful stuff. And that's what I believe. And so over the course of 15 years, I stepped down last year, 15 years, I'm now full professor, tenured. So, you know, I moved into a new phase of my career. I'm still obviously teaching radio and audio, but we went from a station that was on the verge of being shut down to a station that we ended up winning 2 Marconi Awards, the last of which was last year. In my last act as GM, I entered us for Marconi Awards, and we won for Best College Radio Station in the country, which, of course, the Marconi is the highest award in radio in the USA. But awards are nice, fair enough, that's great, yes. And that's great to have that. But the real reward is to see the students, the generations of students, right, over the 15 years who've gone on to work in professional media, not necessarily radio, but some of them in radio, but many of them in TV, in other industries, who've really flourished, and they will credit their time at the radio station, Brave New Radio, WPSE, as being the place where it all began. So really, that's my journey in terms of radio stations. I'm sorry if it sort of bored everyone to death.
Do you want to talk about the origins of World College Radio Day. You obviously are going into year 12 now, but how did the event come to be?
Well, I was watching, this is going back in 2010, I watched that film, The Social Network, which is about the founding of Facebook. And I remember just being captivated and really excited by the idea that, you know, Facebook came from this idea of what can we do to bring people together, and how it really sort of grew from there. And I went to bed that night, this is 2010, December 2010, thinking, what if there was something that could bring college radio together? And I woke up the next morning and it was sort of crystallized there, sort of offered to me on a plate mentally, College Radio Day. And I thought, well, surely that's so obvious, it must have been done. That must have been done. I mean, the day that college radio gets together must have been done. And I was Googling it and I didn't see it. I mean, I did find out that some stations regionally maybe tried to come together or within a state, that kind of stuff. But nothing like trying to bring everyone together. And so it grew from there. And I sort of put it out there 2011. I remember that year I ended up going on Howard Stern, his show, because we came up with this very clever walk of the Braven Radio Award, which is really a device to sort of promote our own station, Braven Radio, but to honor people who we said, you know, students thought were Braven Radio. So ended up going on Howard Stern and being sort of mocked by him. I knew it was, you know, all good sort of fun. Wanting to talk, and I did talk to him about college radio, how important it was. But I remember, like, do I mention to Howard Stern on the air, by the way, College Radio Day is coming, do I mention it there or not? And in the end, I decided not to. Because I didn't want him to sort of like College Radio Day. So I didn't want him to like to tear it down. So I didn't mention it. But then after that, we announced it. And I thought, well, let's see whether we can get 50 stations to do it. And the first year we got, within 3 months or something, 360 stations signed up. And at that point, I thought, okay, in a very, very small microscopic way, it was very similar to the Facebook story in the fact that it went viral to a certain extent, and we did get coverage in the Washington Post, USA Today, New York Times, saying, hey, what, you know, it was a new flashy sort of thing, this idea, College Radio Day. And at that time, and sort of since, once in a while you'll hear of college radio stations being shut down, being sold off, taken over by religious broadcasters or public radio stations will assimilate them. And so we heard that, and that was sort of a trend, and we thought, why can't we all come together? And if we did come together, why couldn't we make a stand to sort of say collectively, we're doing a really important thing? Because we're still very influential, still a tastemaker, still the first place, the first step on a long journey for many students who go into the media or many other fields. And so we felt in setting it up that it was a good thing. And from the very first year, Jamaica said, can we be a part of this? And Canada said, can we be a part of this? So at that point, you got the NCRA, ANREC, the College Radio Association in Canada, right, that been part of us ever since year one. Because at that point, we realized, hang on, we've got to talk about doing this on a world level. And I heard from a woman in Italy called Tiziana Cavallo and a chap called Guillermo from Colombia, who said, hey, on behalf of our national associations, can we get involved too? And so we then agreed that the international version of College Radio Day would be known as World College Radio Day. Really, we've been doing it ever since. And it's really gone now to 1,000 colleges and university radio stations in more than 50 countries have participated in six continents around the world. So it has become a global thing, and it has resonated and is a reminder to everyone that college radio is still alive. It's still doing its thing. Rumors of its death have been greatly exaggerated. It is true that we don't perhaps have the influence that we did back in the 80s, you know, the stories of REM and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, we were tastemakers then. We're still tastemakers now. We're still the first stepping stone in terms of training and equipping students with the broadcasting skills, but we are diminished because of the fragmentation of audience with the internet and all the streaming platforms. But I think if college radio were to disappear, it would be kind of devastating for the professional media industry, because we are the place where many, you know, much talent comes from. It originates here. It's where people realize that we do this. So that sort of gives you a flavor of how it started and what our mission is.
Yeah, I got my start in college radio. With the digital shift happening in consumer behavior, is there any data on how college radio is faring among all the other choices out there?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, obviously a lot of our information is sort of anecdotal. We can tell you from our engagement with social media how college radio is still meeting its audience and providing something to an audience. But, you know, it is difficult. We don't have the, like, for example, my own station, we wanted to have the money to pay to be able to find out what our ratings are. And we don't have the money to do that. But I can tell you this, and this is maybe your listeners would say this is a cop out, that college radio, see, not many academic studies have been done on the impact and importance of college radio, but the ones that have been done, I think, are very interesting. And a woman called Holly Wagg in 2004 did a study about the way in which college radio impacts those who do it. And it said that in terms of them helping form self-identity and stuff, and they said that, yes, it provides a service to an audience, is providing content that you're not going to hear anywhere else. I still believe that college radio mustn't be commercially viable. College radio is not designed to be mainstream because it mustn't have the pressures of having to maintain that audience. It must be free and wild and crazy and adventurous and risk-taking. But Holly Wagg found that even with an audience of one or two people, the practice, the actual doing of college radio, doing a college radio show, is so transformative for the students who do it. It helps them find their voice. It's such a remarkable, life-changing experience that it doesn't matter whether they have an audience or not. Now, I know some people say, well, hang on, what are you saying, that college radio doesn't have an audience? Well, of course it has an audience, and it always will have an audience. It's just never going to be able to compete, and it's not designed to compete with mainstream, commercial, or larger public radio entities. It's not designed, but I would argue that because we sort of exist on the periphery, the edges, we're not on in the mainstream, we're sort of out there on the edges in a way, very sort of alternative content. It is college radio where you will find ideas and programming content and voices and communities that perhaps won't get an outlet anywhere else. And that's why it's important to keep it going, even though people say, well, who still listens to college radio? People do listen to college radio. It's where many bands still get their first exposure, and they get a break. So college radio has its function, and people say to me all the time, yeah, but college radio, it's full of dead air, there's mistakes, it's so unprofessional. And I say, yes, it is, and that's the beauty of it. I love the fact that it is a place where students are learning as they go, and I love the fact that it is not so professionalized and so polished and so perfect that somehow the uniqueness and its humanity has been erased or squeezed out. College radio can be scruffy and rough around the edges. It can be a little bit shambolic. It can be something that's like almost teetering on the edge of catastrophe sometimes. And that is why it's so beautiful, because there's a authenticity, a rawness, the sheer passion exuded by the students who do it is undeniable at this stage in their careers, even if many of them will never do radio again in their lives. So wouldn't we want them to be themselves and to be able to express themselves freely? And that's what college radio is. And that's my own personal take, and I am writing a book about this right now, is that I prioritize expression and authentic communication over technical proficiency, is that I think students should begin with working on how they express themselves and not worry about all the technical stuff, because that can be very, very intimidating. The result is that sometimes you'll get programs and content that students create that is transformative and life-changing for both the student and the listener. More often, you'll just have fun shows and the students will say, hey, listen to this music, it changed my life, and they will genuinely mean that. How many times do you hear broadcasters say, listen to this, it changed my life? Well, when a student says that, they mean it, because they are at a stage in life where music is a currency of self-identity. It's very, very important for them what they listen to. It tells people who they are.
There are a lot of artists who've taken part in your imaging for World College Radio Day this year. You sort of touched on this, but can you tell me about where college radio falls now in that indie and local artist ecosystem within our on-demand audio universe?
I feel college radio is the best place for any artist, particularly indie artists, artists who are starting out. It's the best place to start. And I do feel that college radio does the hard work of discovering true talent. And we will give it exposure to the extent that once it starts to get traction, then suddenly commercial radio says, hey, thanks, good work, we'll step in and we'll take you from here, thank you, and just take it away from us. We feel like that's happened many, many times. College radio is to be used to get that traction for artists, and also it's a place where many of them have their first experience of live performance as well. So I remember, this is a true story, that a few years ago, back in 2010, I think, we had a band, an artist, a group come into our radio station, and I was one of five people in the audience. I thought, this band is really good. The next time I saw that band, I was one of 70,000 people in MetLife Stadium, and that band was the Lumineers. And once in a while, College Radio will do that. We'll find bands, we'll champion them, we'll discover them. And we can also, we have an intense interest, College Radio, of getting the stories from bands. You know, tell us about how these songs are written, tell us about your life story. So we can go to places and we can ask questions that perhaps other forms of media don't particularly care about, and they just want the songs. So we still are great curators of music. CMJ is now gone, although there are rumors that it's sort of coming back. But CMJ for many years was the main sort of outlet to sort of tell people what College Radio was doing when it came to music, and they folded a few years ago. You've got the NACC chart, though, I think, which is continuing that tradition. So College Radio is still influential. It's still a great place for the bands and artists to hone their craft and to sort of get that exposure. But it's difficult to compete because you do have all the streaming services and you do have all these other outlets, but we're still doing that. Our mission in that respect is still fundamentally unchanged.
Does this year's event have a theme? Last year, Weird Al Yankovic was your official ambassador for College Radio Day. It's hard to top Weird Al, Rob.
The thing about Weird Al is that he is actually, when you interview him, he's very funny and he's humorous and all that, but he's quite serious about, and giving credit, and good for him for doing that. Thank you for him, to him for doing that. Give him real credit for how College Radio absolutely really gave him his start, working with Dr. Demento. Really, you know, again, it was a laboratory. College Radio at its best is a place where you can experiment, and it was a great place for him. So he was great in giving us his time, and we've had a lot of people over the past. I mean, we've had Joan Jett, and we've had in the past we had Coldplay and various other ambassadors. And how do we top that? Well, we do have an ambassador this year who I think would certainly equal, if not top that, that I think is very important, because the theme this year is Voices for Peace. And back in February, when Ukraine was invaded by Russia, one of the first things I realized was, well, hang on the student radio stations in Ukraine. And I reached out, and I managed to get in contact with a couple of them. And one was called Student Radio. And I said, listen, is there any college radio stations who want to send a message of greeting and support for the students of and people of Ukraine? Send the audio to me. Within 24 hours, we had 50 stations. I put that together. I sent it to the stations, two stations in Ukraine. And Student Radio got back and they said, thank you so much. This means the world to us. We don't know how long we're going to be able to continue. At that point, we really thought that Ukraine could possibly, the entirety of Ukraine would fall within days. We didn't know what was going to happen. We thought that Kyiv was going to be invaded and everything would go. What amazed me was, and actually it was very emotional, the student radio had students that participated from across Ukraine. And in bomb shelters in their homes, the students with their cell phones were able to put together messages.
Hi. I'm from Lviv, and I need your help whenever you are. I love my city, my country, and will never give it away to anyone. I beg you, support Ukrainians. Get out on the streets and don't be afraid to say the truth out loud. Together, we will stop this horror.
Hello, I'm from Kyiv, and I want you to know the truth. Our cities are under fire of Russian occupants, and I'm worried about my family. Support our country. You never know when the war will be near your home.
I'm from Chernobyl and my brave free country is dying, so I ask you please, if you see that your government doesn't do enough or just nothing, act, go to the rallies. If you can, donate money, spread the real information. Just don't be silent, because each of us kid of the world and we need your help.
My name is Zvenka. I am a sophomore sociology student, and because of war, I cannot attend classes anymore. Stop Russian aggression.
Hello. I live and study in Kharkiv, but actually I'm from Donetsk. So I know that actual war started not several days ago, but 8 years ago, in 2014. And it's not scary anymore, I'm not panicking. All I have left is attempt to help my country to get out of this Russian oppression.
Hi, I'm from Primorsk. And I just want to wish peace and prosperity to my country and its citizens. I want people to live peacefully.
When we heard those voices, some of them as young as 16, I played that in my classes at the university. It was, actually, students were crying, but I think the reason why it resonated with the students was these were people the same age as them who were literally being bombed and under, they could lose their life. So that resonated. It became very real for them. So this year, the theme is Voices for Peace. So for this year, our ambassador is going to be someone who is synonymous with the whole theme of peace. We are actually going to be announcing this on the 26th of September. We can't announce it before then, but we do believe the ambassador this year is going to be someone who will speak very profoundly to this issue and has done great work promoting peace around the world. And I can't say anything more than that at this stage. But I would say that one of the things we are doing, which is unprecedented, never been done before, and I think there's value to doing this. A gesture is important symbolically. I think this is important that we're trying to do something that has never been done before in the college radio world, which is get as many college radio stations and college radio organizations as possible to sign on to a declaration supporting peace by student radio worldwide. And it is a declaration we're going to be putting out on College Radio Day, saying that we support peace. We basically feel that people should live without the fear of armed conflict, without the fear of being invaded and the threat of losing their lives, and that we believe in peace for everyone, and that we believe that college radio is important in promoting peace and is an outlet for all voices, for more communities, for more people. So we are going to be doing this declaration. Never been done before. And actually, we're bringing together stations and countries that have never worked, and this is a good thing to collaborate on. I mean, it is just a statement, a declaration, but symbolically, it's important that you make a stand and you show where you are on this. I mean, it's a very serious theme, isn't it? And obviously, it's very idealistic to a certain extent to think that, you know, global peace, but you have to stand for something, and College Radio does stand for this. And we do live in a world that's very tumultuous right now. And so the students wanted, and this was, I think, really primarily because of what happened and what's going on in Ukraine, and the fact that we have been communicating with them now for weeks. We weren't in touch with them. We thought we thought they were gone, and we didn't know how to get hold of them. But the global marathon this year that we do 24 hours around the world. Typically, we go from country to country to country to country. It's taken months for us to get to the position where we were in touch with Student Radio in Ukraine, and they said, Rob, because we want the global World College Radio Day Marathon to start in Ukraine. And they said, we just don't know, because all our students are in different circumstances. Well, they committed to doing it. And I mean, it's not in the can, or it's not done until it's done, right? But right now we have every belief and intention that the global marathon will start in Ukraine from Student Radio, from the students in Ukraine, which I think will be very important. So yeah, it's a serious issue this year, but we live in serious times, right?
So how many stations are signed on around the world? And can you talk about some of the programming that they have planned for October 7th?
Yeah, the number's always going to be changing up even to the day, but I think we're going to have over 600 stations participating in 45 countries. Maybe more, actually, maybe 50, but it's going to change. Many countries and stations around the world are going to be putting together programming about the theme, Voices for Peace. So they're going to be interviewing local charities, local organizations, or national figures. They're going to, I think in Canada, Barry Rook, who's very involved with the NCRA, NREC in Canada, is uniting stations throughout Canada to do something. I think they've got a special broadcast planned. So everyone is using this as an opportunity to get their leaders, their country's leaders, to get on record and to state that they support peace and they support College Radio as an outlet for peace, for free expression of ideas, and for, you know, being a tool of democracy. And that's the joy of the event, that different countries in their own cultures will be recognizing and celebrating this theme in the way that they want to do it. And that includes obviously doing a lot of interviews with people, but also getting musicians and getting artists to come on the record as well. I think it's going to be an important year. Idealistic to a certain extent to say we want world peace, but I think you have to want that, and you have to have goals and aims like that, and you should never stop striving for that, really. That should be the end goal, even if it might be impossible. We should always be trying our best to do that. And that's the other thing, to sort of, one of the reasons why I love working in college radio, Connie, is that the passion of these students. I'm getting older now, I'm almost 50, but it's their passion. It's their unbridled enthusiasm that keeps me alive. And that sounds really melodramatic to say that, but I mean it. They keep me going. They give me hope. Their enthusiasm, the fact that they will, when they are excited and motivated to do something, they will do an all-nighter. They pull an all-nighter because at this age, it's everything to them. They've not been jaded by life. They've not gone through the process of getting older and having their dreams and hopes pulverized from them. They are living in the moment and they want to make a difference. And who are we to say no? Who are we to say it doesn't matter or you can't do this, you can't do that? I say to them, go for it. No guts, no glory. And their enthusiasm, their sheer passion keeps me feeling young, even though I'm not physically young, but you get my idea.
Absolutely. The past few years, you've run a 24-hour live stream as part of World College Radio Day. Where can people listen to that?
So this year, it's going to be hosted by Live365. So it will be on the Live365 platform. And they donate all the resources and the thousands of hundreds of staffing hours to make that happen and the bandwidth. But it's going to be collegeradio.org is where you can, there's going to be a direct link on the front page of collegeradio.org. We feel as if we're going to broadcast it and then we're going to have it on loop so people who perhaps missed it can listen to it. You're not going to hear anything like this anywhere else. It's going to go from country to country to country. And it's quite the remarkable listening experience to hear, you know, to go from Sweden to Australia to Costa Rica to Spain, to Italy, to Canada, to, you know, Scotland, you know. So it's a great reminder. And I say to the students as well, when they're doing College Radio Day, when each of the students are doing College Radio Day, they only ever see it from their one station. You only ever see it from your perspective. It's very, very difficult for any of the stations participating to grasp a sense of what's going on here. And what's going on is that you've got hundreds of stations on that day around the world coming together, doing this celebration of the unique medium of college radio, but using that moment to not just raise the profile of college radio as a medium itself, but to obviously talk about and discuss the theme of the year and to raise an issue that we think is really, really important. It's very hard for a student to get their head around that. We've got a CRD USA board, and they're from different stations across the country. And just through that board, when we have our weekly meetings, they're like, this is so cool that there are other people my age who are in college radio and we get to work with them. And that spirit of collaboration is really, really, really exciting. Collegeradio.org is where on the day itself, you'll see a button right on the front that you can listen to the live stream, and it will be probably, hopefully, on rotation. So if you miss it, because I, for one, have never heard a complete 24 hours, because at some point you have to sleep. And so I wake up and I say, man, Ghana was on, the first time Africa was on, and they were brilliant, or you just missed Ireland, it was brilliant, or I'm like, well, I have to sleep, no offense. The only people who don't sleep, it occurs to me, are the students. So the students are up, fueled by various sugary substances. But for me, it's just this glorious, life-affirming celebration of college radio, but let's just be a little bit broader than that. It's a great radio moment as well.
Is there a thought you want to close on, Rob?
I would urge people who perhaps have maybe dismissed student, you know, college radio as not being a place where good ideas can come from, or perhaps not being worth checking out or listening to. I would ask you to reconsider, and I would say a good a day as any to start that process, to give it a try, is on October 7th, which is World College Radio Day. If you could listen in to your local college radio station on that day, do so and listen to what they're doing. It might surprise you, you know, what you hear in a good way, and you might be sort of re-energized by their passion. You might realize these kids are doing it for the right reasons. They love it. And that kind of energy, that positive energy, is something that you can take away from the experience for yourself.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rob.
Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for your interest. And it's a pleasure to be on this podcast. I've been listening to all your other podcasts, and I thought, good grief, I really better be prepared here, because this is a fantastic podcast, all the people that you talk to. So thank you for even thinking of us and the invitation.
for listening to Broadcast Dialogue. For more information about the podcast or to receive exclusive access to our weekly briefing about the Canadian media industry, visit us at broadcastdialogue.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, connect with us on LinkedIn, and follow us on Twitter and SoundCloud.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com.
And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.